All right, welcome back to the Bread and Butter Podcast. I'm your host, and today I am here with Joni Libert. And Joni is, I'm hoping I'm going to say this all right, psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner.
Good job.
Did I get it right? I have it written out on my notes because I was like...
Oh, I just said I'm a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner student. So okay. Just to be clear, I am wrapping up my program in May of 2023. So in 2 months, and then I'll take my boards and be working as a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, which is the longest name ever. So I usually just say I'm a psych NP.
Okay.
Because that's a little
and
easier.
Kind of like unpack that for us a little bit. So what does that kind of entail?
Yeah. So we can do a lot of the same things as a psychiatrist does. We're at least in the state of Utah, we can do all the same things. So we do diagnosis, prescription of medication, and we're also licensed in therapy, though not everybody does therapy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you want to potentially start on a psychiatric medication or you're already on one, but you want to talk to someone who has a bit more time than your primary care provider or your OBGYN, then you can set up an appointment with one of us. And we do intakes that last from like an hour or two. I know some people do 2 hour intakes. So we get to ask you a lot more questions and get to know you a little bit better and get a fuller picture of what's going on.
Yeah. And so just to be clear, you focus mostly on mothers, right? So is it like pre-delivery or is it just like postpartum?
Yeah, good question. I have chosen that. Definitely people can specialize in any version of psychiatry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, I've chosen to specialize in that just because I like working with women. So maternal mental health is like perinatal mental health, I guess, would be from conception to a year postpartum. But I just like working with moms. So I don't really care what age that mom is. It tends to be the same problems that were, whether you're 20 or you're 40, it's the same stuff that hasn't been resolved that you haven't worked through. So
that's so interesting. So kind of like give us kind of your backstory, just kind of who you are, how you grew up, kind of what drew you to this. Because anyone that's been on your platform is like, okay, you can just tell that you're passionate about it. You're passionate about it. I just feel like you're out here like trying to make sure that moms are okay. And everyone needs to be making sure that the moms around them are okay. But you are just doing a good job, especially. So I'm so curious kind of how you were led to what you're doing.
Thanks. Yeah, I do really care about, I think ultimately the goal is I really care about supporting women. I grew up in Georgia, came out here in Utah for school when I was 18 years old. I've lived here ever since. And I feel like a lot of my choices growing up were guided by things that I didn't necessarily know if I wanted or not. So I guess what I mean is I grew up in the LDS church and I was kind of told or taught that my job is to become a mom. And so I kind of always built that into my plans, even though there was no partner, there were no children, but I chose to become a nurse. And for that reason, because I'm like, oh, it's a good mom job. So I get into nursing school, BYU, hated it. I did not. I remember like sitting in a group of other nursing students, like our third semester, which is like almost halfway through. And someone was like, do you like this? And I'm like, not really, but we're kind of too far in at this point. And I'd been at BYU forever. So I was just like, whatever, I'm just going to finish. And then a little bit later into nursing school, I learned that a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner is a graduate degree you can get. So I was like, perfect. I want to do psych. This will be great. I don't have to be a nurse forever. So that was part of it. And then I feel like just like as I developed as a person, I kind of learned that I was making choices based on societal pressure. And I felt really good about myself and more empowered as I started making decisions for myself. And I just love seeing women do that too, within the context of motherhood or outside the context of motherhood, whatever that means for them. So I was an intern at Serenity Recovery and Wellness during my schooling for a year. And that's a place that specializes in maternal mental health. They have an intensive outpatient program and they have individual therapy. And I just fell in love with the population. I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to work with women. I want to support them in whatever stage of life they are in. But it tends to be like women have kids and then the coping skills or the way they kind of functioned in life no longer works for them because now there is zero time for themselves and they're like, I can't handle this anymore.
Yeah.
So it's just like a really unique spot to kind of enter in and start helping them build those skills and get some help.
That's amazing. And that hits so close to home for me. I'm a practicing member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And growing up, I just told my husband this the other day. There is a lot of pressure to get married and to have kids really quick. And I truly have been afraid of being a mother since I was 10 years old. Truly. And I would also say I'm a very maternal person. It's a very natural thing for me. It's something that I love. But I started to be afraid of it at a really, really young age, which is so interesting. And I didn't really ever think that there were any other options. Like I told my husband the other day, I was like, I remember as probably like a 12-year-old being like, oh yeah, like it doesn't really matter what I get my degree in college. Like it doesn't matter because I'll just be a mom. Mm. And that works for some people. And I'm not here to throw shade or anything like that. But I do have kind of like this fire within me of like, no, like motherhood is a choice and it's something that you choose under your own. I don't know. I really think you need to be standing on your own 2 feet and in a good place to choose it. And yeah, that's just my little soapbox. And I'm so excited about what you're doing because I think so many of the reasons that I was afraid of motherhood is because I didn't know what it was going to look like for me to have my own identity post motherhood. Mm-hmm. I just think that's a very like widespread issue. And I think, you know, there are the girls who all they want to do is be a mom. And that is amazing. I just also wanted to give a quick, I see you, I love you for the girls who are like, no, I'm so scared. Like, I don't want to lose myself. And I just love that you're teaching tools because I do want to be a mother, right? Like that is something that I want. But I'm extremely invested in educating myself of, you know, planning, like, how can this be the best possible experience for me?
Yeah, I think that is a great way to approach it. And it's definitely, I've always been afraid of having kids, mostly because like I would babysit as a teenager and like, this is the worst. This is so boring. They're horrible. Kids aren't fun. I don't get to do anything I want to do. I don't know why anyone would choose this. And I remember telling my mom like all the time, like, I don't think I want to be a mom. And she's like, you'll want to one day. And so when I like decided to do my internship at Serenity Recovery and Wellness, that was like only moms. I had a friend of mine, he said, like, now you're literally never going to have kids. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. And it's actually had quite the opposite effect on me because I feel like I've learned so much that I actually like am interested in having children for the first time in a long time. It also helps that like I have a great partner who's very supportive and is a great person. Yeah. And so that's changed things everything. A lot too. But I also feel like I'm like, I see moms struggle every day and yet I want to have kids more now than I like ever have in my life. And it's because I feel like, yeah, a lot of the things I learned, a good partner, I've just grown up a little bit. I know that it's something that I want and it's not something that's being like pushed on me, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I love that. And I think another thought that I wanted to throw out there was just, I think we should also normalize, like, I remember feeling kind of ashamed that I was so afraid of motherhood. Like, even as like, I don't know, I remember being like, does that just make me so selfish? And so that's just like my shout out to all the girls, it's not selfish to be afraid of losing yourself. Like that is like great self-preservation instincts that you have there. Like that is not a bad thing to fear, which is why I wanted to have you on because you do have all these tools. So just to kind of jump right in there, like we've talked about, motherhood is a big fear for a lot of people. And there's a lot of education about, you know, what you can do for yourself physically. You know, I feel like I learned a lot more about that. You know what I mean? Like, here's what, you know, your prenatal health is going to look like. Here's what your postpartum health is going to look like. But I don't think we have enough about the mental part of it.
Yeah. So if you're okay with it, could I just kind of talk about like common diagnoses that happen?
Absolutely,
in the
yeah. No, I want to hear it all.
Time. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So something I really like to teach people is the difference between baby blues and a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder, or a PMAD. So actually, let me take a step back. I like to tell people the difference between baby blues and postpartum depression. So most people, research says around 80% of women experience something called the baby blues, which is when you are feeling a lot more emotion. Maybe you're really sad, you're having this crash in progesterone and estrogen, and it just causes you to feel sad. Kind of think of like the most intense period of your life. Your hormones are shifting or are dropping, and it causes a lot of tears. And so it's pretty upsetting to just have delivered a baby. You might have like a C-section incision, or you're having a tear. You're healing, your body doesn't really feel like your own. Maybe you're peeing your pants, like, and then you're crying and you're like not happy about this. It's very confusing. So that happens to 80% of moms. That's not postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. What is if that goes on beyond the, if it goes beyond 2 weeks. So then postpartum depression is the most common one talked about, but there's also postpartum anxiety, postpartum OCD, postpartum psychosis, and postpartum PTSD, which is more related to birth trauma usually. So there's a lot of different versions of having a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. They can happen in the postpartum. They can also happen while you're pregnant. People's OCD can really pick up, or anxiety can really pick up during the pregnancy, or depression can also do that. So I just like to tell people that there's a difference. And if you might feel better after 2 weeks, but 20 to 25% of women experience a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. So 1 in 5, 1 in 4 moms are going to experience it. And it's also important to know 1 in 10 dads will experience one. It's not like the hormonal component, but they're also going through this major life transition that can cause some significant mental health struggles. I also like to share some common symptoms of a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. So one of the more upsetting ones is feeling just like rage and anger. And irritability. I think it can be so upsetting because we kind of frame motherhood as being something that is beautiful and wonderful and the best time in your life. And so when you feel angry, you feel like a bad mom. But it's common. Like I said, let's 20 to 25%. And then even if you don't have a diagnosed perinatal mood anxiety disorder, you might just feel angry, which we can talk about in a minute. A little bit more. But so that's one big thing. Some people feel a lack of interest in the baby, or a difficulty bonding with a baby. They can have scary or unwanted thoughts that can be really upsetting. And then a lot of the other ones are more symptoms that you hear more typically with depression, anxiety, like a loss of interest in the things you used to enjoy, feeling guilt, shame, or hopeless. Not being able to sleep as much, or sleeping too much, which usually isn't an issue in the postpartum period, but not being able to sleep is more often the issue. crying, sadness, constant worry, racing thoughts. Sometimes you can have like these physical symptoms of like muscle aches, dizziness, hot flashes, nausea. And then finally, you can have possible thoughts of harming yourself or harming your baby. So those are just good things to know about and good things to be aware of. Like if I start feeling these things, then maybe I need to reach out and to get help. And that's a lot of like what my podcast goal is to help people know where to go, because most people just go to their OB, which is a really good first step, but not every OB knows about the like huge resource list that we have and how to get in contact with a therapist that takes your insurance, who specializes in the perinatal period.
And just like thinking of, I mean, I try to picture just, you know, anyone, you know, you've just had this major, major life change. And then to have kind of the burden of not knowing what's happening to you, you know, I can just imagine just kind of, I would be horrified if I felt like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. you know, what's wrong with me? Why am I not connecting with my baby? You know, because so often all we really see or get comments on, you know, let's talk about Instagram when people announce their babies. I could write you 5 different Instagram captions just from all the ones I've read. It would be like, we are just in heaven right now, just, you know, enjoying this little angel, like more details to come, you know, just all of these like really happy, kind of heavenly experiences. And not to say that that isn't part of it. I think both things can be true, but I do think that that is not everyone's experience. And so I think even just normalizing, like, yeah, this happens and it doesn't have really anything to do with me, but, you know, here's what I need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you make a good point. Like I said, 20 to 25% of moms experience this. That means 70 to 75% don't. At least those are the statistics we have today. And those are really changing. And it depends on what research you look at. But, you know, some moms don't experience this. And that's okay. Like, that's not a problem either. And I love, like, people are often feeling those heavenly feelings, or we have our little angel. That's fantastic. But it isn't the experience for everyone. And if that is not your experience, you're not alone in it. You just don't see that. People typically don't say, hi, this is our new baby. We really don't like him that much. Like, but fine. That's like realistically what some people are feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. So just out of curiosity, are there things like preventatively that you can do, like lifestyle wise, like day to day, that can help with, like, so let's say, like, I know that I'm prone to anxiety. So let's say I'm postpartum. I'm noticing that, you know, obviously things are going a little bit haywire. I'm not feeling myself. I can feel myself start to spiral. What are things that I should try to be implementing, or is it even in my control?
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I love talking about prevention. I would say even before you get postpartum, if you're hearing this when you're pregnant, it's best to try to plan for that before it even happens. So once you're postpartum, you're not sleeping, which is just like fundamental to your mental health. And so some things I would recommend discussing with your partner, if you have one, is like basically a postpartum plan. And I really recommend people just like actually writing it down and having a real conversation about it. But talking about like, how are we each going to get sleep? Who can we call for help other than our moms? Because people usually say our moms. It's like, okay, that's two people. Who else? Do you have other friends? Do you have other family members who have offered? I like to ask, like, how are you going to work out night feedings? You know, is if you're going to breastfeed, can the partner bring the baby to you and then soothe them back to sleep so that you're only up for a little bit breastfeeding and you don't have to be up for the full maybe hour getting them back to sleep? Well, I'll ask him, like, who could come over during the day to watch the baby so you can get a nap? Or also a good one to talk about is like, what are your top three concerns about having a baby? And having each partner talk about that. It's like, maybe your concern is you're not going to feel like yourself anymore and you're not going to be able to do your hobby anymore. Maybe the concern is we fight more when we're tired and I don't want to fight with you during this time. So just having those conversations, open conversations with your partner. Another thing I really like to tell people is if you don't have a perinatal therapist, to queue up an appointment with one. There's a great website in Utah called maternalmentalhealth.utah.gov. You can put in your insurance and find a therapist who takes your insurance who specializes in this period, because it's different. Every therapist is great, but it is a different approach to therapy. So those are some things you can do preventatively. If you're in that spot, there's a lot of things you can do as well. And it's like hard to like really dive into them deeply right now. But there is this great acronym called SUNSHINE, and I'm going to have to look it up because I don't remember every letter. But there's some, like you said, lifestyle things you can do. So this is on like the WIC website. This is on PSI Utah's website. But SUNSHINE stands for sleep. So aiming to get as much sleep as you can, which I know is really hard. But like if you can get 4 or 5 hours of uninterrupted sleep, whether it's in the middle of the day or night, for a few nights a week, that's going to help you so much. It talks about nutrition. So like trying to have, people talk about having like baskets at the places you're feeding baby. So you can feed yourself while you're feeding baby or drink some water while you're feeding baby. It talks about support. So that's SUNSHINE. So it's one of the other S's, is being able to talk honestly with a trusted friend or family member. Humor, like trying to have fun in life still and not just getting so regimented and feeling like your life is Groundhog's Day. And then there's a few other ones, nurturing yourself, taking care of yourself, which we can kind of dive into a little bit more, and then exercise. Like if you can get outside, if you can walk for 10 minutes, you're just going to feel a lot better. If you know that you're prone to anxiety, you are going to have anxious thoughts. So this is like another piece of education I like to talk to people about. Almost research shows that like basically 100% of people have, both parents have intrusive thoughts about their baby. Lots of them are about the baby not breathing at night, or accidentally harming their baby. So they can have thoughts also, like, to be a little more specific, it can be like, I'm going to drop this baby. And what if I get in a car accident with this baby? What if I throw my baby in a pot of boiling water? What if I change the diaper and their leg pops off? What if I sexually harm this baby? And so you have these thoughts and they're really upsetting because you don't want to do them. But you might think that that says something about you as a parent, that you're like, I am bad because I just had a thought about throwing my baby into a pot of boiling water. Like, I would never want to do that. Why did I have that thought? That must mean something about me as a parent. So I think just starting with education and recognizing, like, I'm going to have intrusive thoughts and they might be upsetting, but if you can recognize them as intrusive thoughts and not give them the time of day that you might otherwise, it can really help de-escalate some of that anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I appreciate you just being candid about some of the intrusive thoughts that you can deal with, because again, I just think like normalizing is just so, so important. I think, totally. I mean, everyone's had the experience of having an intrusive thought and it is upsetting. And then you add a literal infant and I think that would shake anyone up. Something I am kind of curious about is if you, like, we talk a lot about boundaries, both on the podcast, just in life, society, we're really big on boundaries right now. And, you know, for good reason. How would you recommend going about starting boundaries, kind of setting up boundaries as a new mom? Because I think of myself and I would not even know where to start. Like, I really don't know. The only thing that I can possibly think of is like, oh, I should probably like tell people that they can't hold my baby unless they've washed their hands. That is the extent of what I would know to do. So I'm so curious what you recommend.
So let me make sure I understand your question. Are you asking about like how to set a boundary or what boundaries what, yeah, do like, moms what would be need like to set?
A couple helpful boundaries to kind of keep in the back of your head if you're pregnant, if you're a new mom, you're like, okay, I feel like things are out of control. Like, what boundaries are going to help me stay the most mentally well?
Yeah, I think if I can, like, I guess, talk in more general terms, one is learning how, this is hard because it's like setting boundaries with your partner would be number one. And then the second one would be setting boundaries around your mm-hmm. time. So with the partner, if you've ever read Fair Play, it's like one of my favorite books. I think everybody should read it like as soon as possible. It's even better if you do it before you have children. But it talks about how the mental load of running a home tends to default to the woman in a heterosexual relationship. And there's not as much research, or I don't know of any research in different relationships, but in a heterosexual relationship, the mental load, the invisible load, the emotional labor defaults to the woman. And this is usually manageable pre-children. But once kids come into the picture, it becomes unmanageable. And moms often feel, the words I hear, overwhelmed, resentful of my partner, maybe jealous of my partner that they get to keep living their life and my life is totally mm-hmm. different. But overwhelmed is the number one. And that's like actually what I wanted to call the podcast, was the Overwhelmed Moms Club, but it just didn't roll off the tongue as well as the Sad Moms Club did. So yeah, exactly. But that is just the number one word I hear, is that I feel so overwhelmed. So if you can learn beforehand or start today and recognize, like, what is overwhelming me? What do I need a partner for? How can my partner, I guess, be a partner is a better question. I have problems when people say, like, my partner is very helpful or they're helping me, which is like, I guess that's great, but it's like, no, you guys are in this together. It doesn't need to be 50-50, mm-hmm. but you need to find something that feels more fair or you're going to feel resentful towards them. So a lot of therapy is me talking to women about like what's on your plate that's stressing you out, or you know, what caused this fight with your partner, and then teaching them how to set a boundary around that often chore, or around night feedings, or around those are things that are on their mind, and having their partner start taking some of those things off their plate. I also like to show people, there's like this feminist comic by, I forget what it's called. I think it's called The Mental Load, and feminist comic, if you just like Google it. But it talks a lot about this particular issue. And I like sharing it with moms and being like, okay, I want you to make a list of all the things that are on your mind. And then I want you to talk to your partner about how they can start taking some of these things and take the conceptualization, the planning, and the execution of it. Not just like making the dinner, but planning what they're going to make, going grocery shopping, and or putting on the grocery list, and then making the meal, or you know, whatever. So that's like the number one. And then the second one is around building time in for yourself, because your needs and the things that bring you joy don't go anywhere. You still need those things, but a kid will suck you dry. They will take all of your time if you let them. And so saying like, I need to get out of the house once a week or twice a week for an hour to do X. Like for me, that would be hiking or spending time with a friend or going on a walk. Like those are the things that I need to feel like me. And so just knowing what those things are before and building in a way to make time for those and leaving the house, that might not be as possible in the first couple weeks, but as soon as possible, making time for that and then doing that for your partner as well so that they can feel like themselves.
I love that. And I think too, when you said like kids can suck you dry, one thing that's always stuck in my head, my mom said something to the effect of like, one of like kind of the funny kind of endearing things about babies is that they're extremely happy and naive to be the center of attention all the time. Like they know that their needs will be met and that they'll be taken care of. And that's so beautiful that you get to provide that for them. But I also think knowing that, you do need, like you said, to like plan in, okay, my baby isn't going to consider like, oh, mom needs a break. Oh, maybe I should settle down. Like you're going to need to plan in time where the baby is taken care of by someone else that's not you so that you can leave. And just, yeah, I love that. Just like planning on that. And I do think too, as women, where we get tripped up so often is that we can't let go of the control. And we kind of have this mentality of like, no one can do it like I can. And so no one else can do it. I feel like I've seen that time and time again, just in moms, just that I've observed, you know, like, oh, can I hold your baby? Like, oh, no, you know, and that's a bad example, right? They could have their own set of boundaries around who can and can't hold their child. But yeah, I think that's one thing to really kind of consider before having kids is like, okay, what are my own, like, what's my relationship with like control? And, you know, what things do I need to learn how to relinquish control of?
Yeah. And there's so much to say about that. There's two main things that come to mind. One is that the woman or the birthing partner goes through let me say this differently. The brain is changed after you have a baby so that you are primed to take care of that baby. And so there's a certain aspect of you that's working against your biology, in that you are primed to focus on baby and kind of let your needs fall by the wayside. So if you know that, you can kind of start, you can build boundaries around your own time. And that's why postpartum anxiety is so, so common. And a lot of it is because your brain was just swimming in estrogen and progesterone, and that primed the brain for anxiety and all of your focus being on baby. So recognizing that is just really good. The second thing is, the second thing is a statistic by Dr. John Gottman. If you're familiar with like the Gottman method, it's like a approach to marriage therapy or couples therapy. So they talk about the statistic in one of their books that 66% of couples struggle after having a child, and 33%, or about a third, don't. And the main reason why that those don't is because the birthing partner or the woman often allows the other partner to be a parent, and they let go of that control. Oftentimes the woman is the one that gets to stay home with the baby, and so they get to do the trial and error in private, and they figure out how to take care of their baby. oftentimes there's not paternal leave. And so the guy goes back to work. And so they don't get that trial and error by themselves. They don't get to have the baby cry for hours and figure out how to solve the issue. So when they're around their partner and the baby's crying, the mom might be like, let me just do it. It's easier for me. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's so important to build that time around, carve out that time for yourself so that you can leave and let your partner have some time with that child, because they're an equal parent. And if you kind of don't let them be, then they're not going to, like, you're kind of creating your own problem where the partner can't be helpful. And so, yeah, I think control is a huge thing. It is easier to just do it, except that it's not easier in the long run. It's easier to let your partner be a real parent. And because they are 50%, like, they are an equal parent, and they can only be equal if you allow them to learn.
I love that. Mostly because it resonates so much. I'm definitely a control freak myself. And we just have a little dog. But even with things like that, I've noticed myself like, oh, you know, like, I kind of like to do it this way, or, you know, whatever it is. So yeah, but I do think, yeah, that's a very widespread issue that a lot of women deal with. The other thing that I love that you keep emphasizing is they are a real parent. They are not the second in, like, the second in command parent. They're not the bonus parent. They are not your helper. They're not your babysitter, right? Like, and I just think we need to just push that so much, because I don't think that we're giving, I don't think that we're giving men the chance that they deserve to be an equal parent. Like, and you know, and there are those guys who maybe they don't want that. Maybe that's not, you know, and that does happen, right? Like, there are men who may not just not be helpful, but I do think there are just really amazing men who want to be full parents. And yeah, I love the concept of, like, let them, like, you guys both had this child, let them have this experience.
Yeah, I think part of empowering women is empowering men.
100%.
And by letting the woman step back and really figure out what they love and spend time outside of motherhood, you're allowing the potentially father or the other parent to step in and figure out how to be a parent.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to plug is, I do think that it's okay if, you know, let's say you're practicing letting your partner be a full parent. You might step back. He might be like, you know what? Get out of the house. Go do something for you. Whatever. You might get out of the house and be like, I don't know. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what to do without, you know, this baby attached to me. Like, what do I like? Do I have friends? Like, am I even socially apt anymore? So I think that's normal too, because I've had experiences where I'm like, okay, now I have this time. I truly don't know what to do with it. Like, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like when I've talked to moms who are younger moms, this seems to be even, maybe it's not more frequent with younger moms. I think I just see it because they went from, like, school to motherhood so immediately that there's no gap where they're like, suddenly I have this free time and I have to figure out what I like to do. So I think that's really common. Moms don't actually know what to do. And then, like I said, they have this potential anxiety towards taking care of the baby that everything else feels like not even secondary, but like tertiary, like so, so low on their priority list that they're like, why would I do something for myself? That's not important at all. Like, the only important thing is taking care of baby. So I think that's normal. And I feel like I've had a lot of conversations with moms being like, what do you like to do? Or what did you like to do before you had a baby? And they're like, I don't even remember. I don't even know. I'm like, okay, like, what's something you want to try? Is there a class you can go to? Do you want to go on a walk? Is there a friend you can reach out to? Could you talk on the phone? Can you just go get yourself a drink and sit in the car and watch your favorite show? Like, it doesn't have to be anything that costs money or takes, or that's like super special. You can just go do something away that reminds you that you were a human before you had a baby.
Yeah. Well, I'm a huge proponent of the drink run. That is always my go-to. Another thing I was going to just ask about that I'd love to dive into a little bit is, I mean, beyond kind of like the obvious, like, mental benefits of, you know, finding yourself and being a human, you know, and a mother, let's talk about the, like, the benefits of, you know, why do you need to do this? Why do we need to be humans first and mother second? Like, for what? Like, what do we want to teach our kids by showing them that. I wish we would have talked, like, I wish I would have been taught that more as a kid, I guess.
Yeah, I think I'll go back to Fair Play. So the book Fair Play, in one of the chapters, it talks about how this mom, or it's common that moms will go to their husbands or their partner's work dinner or work meeting. And all these people there have things to talk about. And they ask, what do you do? And they say, I'm a stay-at-home mom. And they're like, oh, cool. What else do you do? And they say, nothing. And they kind of mean it. They really don't have a life outside of being a mother. And so this story goes on to say how these this couple ended up splitting up because she became kind of boring. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of like harsh, but I think it's, I don't think you should have hobbies for the sake of, you know, so your partner doesn't cheat on you,
for sure.
But that you are, you matter. I guess that's like why you matter. And one day your kids aren't going to be there and you're going to want to do things for yourself. And also it's really, really admirable to have a parent who has interests, and then you can share those interests with your kids.
I think it's a kind of a complicated conversation because I think some moms feel the pressure of, they're like, oh my gosh, like, do I need to have a side hustle? Like, what do I need to be? Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And I never want to be that person that's like, well, you know, you better get up and start an Instagram account and, you know, become an influencer, whatever it is. But I guess one thing that I think a lot about when I, you know, when I want to be a mom, is I want my children to see me be a full human. And I have an aunt who, and, you know, this is pertaining more to like her dating life with her husband, but she's like, we have a boundary where, you know, once every month or twice every month, we go somewhere kid free because we need to practice being adults and not just parents. And I think sometimes for women, especially because we are so primed to like tunnel vision, take care of this child, we kind of forget to be adults. You know, like, we hear moms be like, oh, like, yeah, I went to this like social event and I realized I don't know how to talk to adults. You know what I mean? Like, I you know, I talk to kids all day. Mm-hmm. I watch kid shows and, you know, all these things, and they just, and like I said, no shade there. It's not a shame thing. I think for me, it's more like, you deserve it. Like you said, like, you matter. You deserve to have a life beyond this selfless thing that you do of being a mother. And yeah, I guess that's where I wanted to go with it, is just, you matter.
Yeah. I think that's, your example with your aunt is, that's the goal, is to just spend time doing things you love. And it doesn't need to be a money thing. She calls it, Eve Rodsky in the book, she calls it your unicorn space. Like, it just is the thing that you feel passionate about, that brings you joy, that like puts you in flow, like whatever the words you want to use are. For me, that's like spending time with friends. I spend a lot of time with a lot of friends. Like, that is so important to me. And I would not feel like myself if I was alone. I mean, that is when my mental health has suffered the most, is when I have not been spending time with people. So that's just like essential for me, is to go on girls trips or just go on a walk with a friend. And then like skiing and hiking are the other two things that are really important to me as well. And so, yeah, I will prioritize that. Will it look the same? No, it's not going to look exactly the same, but it's just making that a priority along with everything else you're prioritizing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So just as we kind of wrap up a little bit here, I would love to just know, because I am in this space right now where I am not a mom myself. I have mom friends, I have pregnant friends, all the things. What would you say, how can I best support either a pregnant mom in my life, a postpartum mom, maybe someone who's, you know, dealt with a miscarriage? Give me like top five, top three, whatever. What can I do? Because I often feel unsure. Like, do they want me to come over? Do they not? Like, what, you know, is dinner helpful? Is that weird? Like, do you know what I mean? I would just love, you're like, okay, from me to you, here's what I would suggest.
Yeah, I feel like I can talk about pregnancy and postpartum. Miscarriage is maybe, or like grief is a little mm-hmm. bit different. So I'll answer to that. I think we talked about the mental load a little bit, and I didn't really explain what that is, but it's kind of like this checklist of things that you need to do to make the home move forward. So it's like, oh, I need to add that to the grocery list. Oh, I need to start the laundry for like this certain day at school the next day so that my kid has that shirt. I need to buy a present for that kid. I need to call and check in on this person. And then on top of that, I need to do the laundry. I need to do the dishes. I need to mop the floor, whatever. So I feel like one of the big things that we can do to support people is first to say, how are you doing? And then say, no, really, how are you doing? That's what I do to everybody, which maybe is annoying. And some people are really doing well. I'm like, that's awesome. I just assume everyone's doing bad because I have a sample size of people who are not doing well. And just say like, you know, is this hard? Is it like allowing that conversation? If that's not something that's important to someone, like maybe they don't feel like opening up about it, that's okay. You know, you don't have to like really pressure them into saying like you hate motherhood. But then the second thing is to just like actually take something off their mental load. So I make the suggestion to moms to write down a to-do list of things you need done when people come to visit you and the baby. And instead of letting them hold the baby for 20 minutes, ask them to do something on the to-do list. Now, most people aren't going to feel comfortable doing that. But if you know to ask that, you can say like, hey, what's on your to-do list that I can get done for you right now? I'm not going to do it perfectly like you would, but can I do your dishes? Can I go grab you a meal? Can I go grab you a drink? Can I watch the baby while you nap for 2 hours? Whatever. Just like offering those ideas and giving real help. And then if they're pregnant, you know, kind of, again, having those conversations. But I think, I don't know, pregnancy is a little bit harder. It just depends on where they're at. I think helping them prep for that postpartum period is what I end up doing. I get books, or you can say like, hey, can I find you a perinatal therapist that I can call and set up an appointment with after you have your baby so you can just have someone set up in case you need it. There's a lot of friends that call on behalf of their friends to set up appointments. That's some ideas. I mean, and then honestly, like every person's different, and being like, being really honest, I want to actually help you. What will actually be helpful right now? Because sometimes bringing a meal isn't helpful because they're allergic to a million things, or they already have a dinner for that night. But giving them ideas and just actually having a really honest conversation.
Yeah. No, I love the idea of kind of giving them ideas and being specific. I think also sometimes they are dealing with so much that if you don't give them ideas, they're going to be like, I don't know. It's like when someone's like, what do you need? And you're like, literally, I just need no one to talk to me because I am not like, I cannot come up with ideas. So either have a suggestion or don't talk to me. I really appreciate that. And then let's just kind of plug your podcast, plug your resources. I'll be listing a lot of resources in the show notes for anyone who is curious. I'll be listing books, websites.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, first let me talk about resources because that's like the number one thing I want people to get. Like, even if you don't listen to the podcast, I want you to find these resources. So first, just knowing that there are therapists who specialize in the perinatal period, that they are different and that they are worth seeking out if you are struggling during that time. So the first place to look, if you're in Utah, and I don't know, are most of your listeners in Utah? You are.
Okay.
So if you're in Utah, I want you to Google maternalmentalhealth.utah.gov, and it's a search engine for anyone that has been trained by Postpartum Support International, which is like the organization for perinatal therapists. You can search for therapists, you can search for free support groups, you can search for like doulas, you can search for providers like physicians and nurse practitioners and et cetera. So that's the place I would look, and you can filter by your insurance. The second place is PSI's website. It's postpartum.net, and they have tons of free online support groups. They have one for OCD. They have one for people who've adopted. They have one for people who've lost, had pregnancy or infant loss, or people who have infertility challenges. So those are like the two main ones I give people. And then the podcast is supposed to build on that. So the podcast is called The Sad Moms Club. The Instagram is the.sad.moms.club, I think. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I haven't typed it in a long time. My whole goal and the reason why I did this is to connect you with those resources and then the actual specific companies and organizations that exist in Utah. I try to release an episode every week. That doesn't always happen because school's really busy, but We just have such incredible providers. We have so many good places to go, whether it's like you need help with trauma, if you need help with OCD, if you need help with like, if you need a couples therapist, like there's so, so many good people, and they're not, they don't have these crazy long wait lists. I feel like that's kind of a myth that's going around right now. Some places do. And like for medication mm-hmm. providers, certainly there's more of a wait list, but for therapists, you can find a therapist that will take you soon, because you are often like more in crisis and you have this baby you're taking care of. You can bring your baby with you. We can do virtual appointments. Like, we will work with you. We want to help you feel better as soon as possible, and you can feel better. I think that's like the other big message, is like, there is hope. You're not alone. So many other moms are feeling this. So many other moms are like hating their lives or are really struggling or having these really obsessive thoughts that are upsetting to them. And we can help you get better. But we just have to like know you're there, and we need you to reach out first.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for being here. This was just a treat to have you and to hear all of your wisdom. And I feel like I could just talk forever about how women matter and your happiness matters, and just take care of yourself. So thank you so, so much for being here, Joni.
Yeah, thanks, Brecklyn. This has been way scarier to be on this side. So thanks for the challenge to my anxiety.
Oh my gosh, no, it was the best. And then for everyone else, go ahead and go check out Joni. I'll be linking everything, like I said, below, her podcast, her Instagram, and then go ahead and be nice to me and leave me a rating and review. That's it for this week. I will see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.